This is the 343 Podcast. I'm your host, John Pronich. Welcome to the show. The key to achieving a significant degree of competency is repetition. Furthermore, the key to making up that technical debt that we've described in previous episodes is repetition. The key to creating a moat, a competitive advantage over your competition, is repetition. The key to achieving your goals is repetition. But not just any type of repetition. It must be repetition of the right things. This seems to be common sense. So why don't we follow the formula that clearly works and that so many success stories have as a common theme? If I want six-pack abs, well, there's a clear-cut formula for that. Why don't I have six-pack abs? I didn't do the work, or I didn't stick to the diet, or I didn't have the consistency, or I didn't do the program for long enough. Now, how much consistency, discipline, and hence repetitions are required to achieve competency in soccer depends on where you currently are and what your objectives are, short-term, medium-term, and long-term. In this episode, Gary Kleiban and I discuss repetition and how it fits into the player development puzzle. We'll get started right after this short message about our online coaching education program. Thanks so much for listening, and thank you so much for being here with us. When it comes to coaching education, being able to discern what will and won't help you can be costly and confusing. The internet is flooded with so much information. There are tons of drills out there for you to watch and tons of things that you can try with your players and teams. But without the proper context and the proper guidance from a legit mentor, you are not going to get the edge that you are looking for or the results that you want. That's what the 343 Premium Coaching Education Program gets right. It's rooted in the real experiences of a master practitioner that has coached soccer right here in America. As a coach, Brian Kleiban has been able to overcome all of the obstacles and produce college-level, professional, and international caliber players. Training just twice per week, field congestion, pay-to-play, you name it. But using the 343 framework and staying consistent with the methodology has led to tremendous success. What the 343 coaching program offers you is a look at Brian's actual work, his real art. It's all captured and delivered to you in its purest form to help you gain an advantage and become a better coach. This exclusive online program features videos of Brian mic'd up during actual training sessions with his real players and teams as they prepare for league games and tournaments. This is the only program in the country that gives you this type of authentic, behind-the-curtain look at player, team, and coach development. It's unlike anything else in this country. It cannot be replicated, and it's not theory or speculation like you'd see in a presentation or something staged like you'd get at a convention. So if you're looking for drills, we've got those, but more importantly, we have the mentorship, the proven results, and the community of ambitious coaches that you won't find anywhere else. To experience all of this, consider joining the 343 Premium Coaching Education Program. You can find all of the details at 343coaching.com. So today's topic is repetition and the benefits of repeating certain actions or certain habits. And I want to just always start with, you know, your thoughts on the topic, what repetition means to you specifically and how that relates to soccer development, player development.
Sure. I think everybody that's listening probably has an appreciation that repetition is important in any task. So we're not saying anything new here necessarily. But what is interesting to me regarding the topic is that even though we know that repetition is important, very few of us actually follow our own advice or the advice of others who are saying, hey, repeat the task, repeat the X, Y, or Z so that you can get good at something. And that's what's fascinating to me, John. And I don't know if we just need to ram it down our throats more often and ram it down other people's throats more often for it to really sink in how important it is. and maybe drill down into what you mentioned, that it has to be one repetition of the right things, and how long repetition has to go on for, I think, is another crucial point. If I may offer a little bit of a personal anecdote or experience, I still teach at the university. I teach physics. I teach around a dozen different classes in physics at different levels at the university. And I started maybe 15 years ago with my first course. And when you first teach a course, you don't really know what you're doing. You might know the subject, but it's the first time you're delivering the message and you're trying to teach somebody else things about the subject, and you're not great at it. Okay. You're just finding your footing. You're just finding how to say certain things and what not to say, and what questions are important and what questions are not important, and the degree of preparation you need, et cetera, et cetera. And then, over the course of the years, I've taught the same classes, multiple times. And by the time you taught it, four or five or 10 times, and you're on year 10, gosh, man, it just becomes natural. You have such a command of the subject and a command of the art of teaching, if you've been deliberate about it, that your flow is spectacular, especially compared to day number one. And so there is an element of repetition. I've repeatedly taught these same 15 types of courses throughout the years. And once you've lived that long or done something for that long, I think you gain a better appreciation for how important repetition is. So anyways, just a personal anecdote. I know that we have a lot of coaches in our audience, and the same thing applies to coaching. I saw it through Brian, and I see it through the coaches who are in our programs and their personal anecdotes that they share with us on repeating the same sorts of activities that they do with their teams and their players for an extended period of time leads to a higher degree of competency or expertise in the particular activities themselves. And then how everything gets stitched together to form a holistic team training methodology. And then you become really good at the methodology over the course of many, many years of implementing the methodology. So there's a little talk of repetition on the coaching side. Of course, we can drill down on it as far as you'd like. I started writing soccer-related things in 2009. We're in 2020 now. I stopped about 4 or 5 years ago to shift my focus in another area of soccer. But, I think back, gosh, if I was just writing every single day consistently since 2009, I'd be a pretty goddamn good writer, in my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think I'm pretty sure I'd be way better than I currently am now. But I didn't do these things. So anyways, maybe I'll stop right there and you can keep probing me.
One of the things that you have written, and I'm looking at it right now, and you just mentioned it a moment ago, is that for whatever reason, we know that repetition is something good, and repetition is something that will help us develop good habits, achieve our goals, those types of things. But the common sentiment that I tend to see is that repetition is difficult for one reason or another. It's hard to stay consistent. And there could be a number of different reasons. Some of the ones that you have listed here that I'm reading are, is it boring? Is repetition boring? And these all tend to be like negative things. Like, you have to learn to love the process, which implies like the process is hard or difficult or boring or grueling, those types of things. And it would be more fun to do different things than to do the same thing over and over and over again, which is kind of like a grind. And I think what kind of fuels those thoughts is maybe a little bit of a misunderstanding, or maybe just, a lack of a vision of what the end process or what the end product will eventually be or should be. And so when we're talking about a player, 10, 11, 12 years old, okay, what is the end goal for that player and what is required to get that player there? And if you don't have that end goal, then doing the same thing every day, yeah, it can seem boring or just useless, because how long are you doing it for? What's the, you know, what's the reason why I'm doing all this stuff? And coaches too, you mentioned coaches, if they're going to use the same exercise over and over and over again to try to, you know, help their players get better, well, what's the end goal? What's the style of play you're trying to elicit with all these exercises? And, you know, how long is that process going to last? And without that end point, I think it makes things really difficult. So maybe goal setting, I don't know how to really describe that. Maybe you have some thoughts on that.
Sure. So I mentioned the teaching and how I got good at teaching, and how that relates to what you eloquently put is I was basically forced to go teach every single semester. Otherwise I don't get paid is one. And two is, you know, classes from 10 a.m. to 11:15 a.m. So I need to be there every single time at 10 in the morning and be there for an hour or whatever. So I was forced to show up and do the work every time for years, whether I liked it or I didn't like it. And if it were up to me, and if I had the liberty to choose when to show up or when not to show up, it's very likely, it's very human nature for most of us to just be like, today I don't really feel like doing it. And then you don't form that those repetitions, and you're now very susceptible to move on to something else that you might find more interesting in the moment. So number one thing that comes to mind, John, is being forced to do it. The alternative is that you are somehow self-motivated and show up even though there's nobody there telling you to show up. And in that respect, I think some elements are important. One is if you're having fun or having a good time with it, because then, you know, you're more incentivized to show up and do the work every day. But even at that point, things could get old and shiny new objects pass by and you get distracted and end up moving on to something else and you don't get your repetitions in. And then number three, of course, is how long a time you have to sustain this discipline, this commitment, and these repetitions for. I think that is a huge obstacle for people to overcome, especially when we're talking about achieving something remarkable or becoming something remarkable in a particular craft or discipline. It just takes so goddamn long, John. It takes 5, 10, 15 years. And if that is what people have in mind, then that's just you don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, even if it's well-defined. Even if we're talking about soccer and we're talking about a youth player and you're saying you want to be a professional, okay, great. Being a professional is 15 years out into the future or whatever it is, 10 years or 8 years. It just seems like an eternity to them to do something every single day for 8 years. Thankfully, you have teams and you have coaches. You have club football where it's fun to play matches, so you're there every week on the training grounds. From the coaching perspective, we can have that discussion too. It's hard for them or any person, again, to accept, man, really? I'm going to have to utilize this methodology or be on this grind for 5 to 10 years as a coach before I have some sort of, you know, respectable degree of competency. It's kind of like a Debbie Downer. So what can we do? Yeah, goal setting. Maybe set short, medium-term goals so that you get that drip of excitement, that drip of dopamine, that sense of accomplishment that then resets the clock for another, I don't know, month to 6 months, and then you have that success, and then you reset the clock, and you keep going step by step by step. I don't know. That's what I have to contribute from what you brought up.
I'm going to steal some more of your words because I think this helps frame it appropriately for people, especially coming off of what you just said. So setting goals, you know, short, medium, and long-term goals is kind of like a roadmap, and setting like those micro goals, like you mentioned, can just help you continue to experience that excitement or that high and keep you moving forward. But when it comes to player development and making sure a player is moving in the right direction. There are some general milestones that a player must reach along the way in order to, you know, make it to the next level. I know you're not a big fan of that phrase, but I think one of the first things that a player needs to be aiming for is some degree of competency in whatever field they are, whatever, what's the word I'm looking for? Category they are trying to develop in, whether that's technical or tactical or physical or mental. They need to develop some degree of competency in that before they can move on to other things. So, I guess what I was trying to get at is, is the first thing that somebody should be aiming for some degree of competency? And once they reach that, does that ever stop? Can you stop working on those types of things once you feel like you've reached that degree of competency? And how long does it take to reach that? I mean, there's so many, I guess, different questions I could ask just even about that one word.
Yeah, no, I get it completely. Maybe let's bring it down to a specific example, if we can. There's an activity that we do in training all the time. It's the 4v1 rondo. We do a whole bunch of rondos, but let's talk about maybe just one in particular, 4v1 rondo. And what that activity specifically is developing is the foot sensitivity of the player. So how good is the first touch to set themselves up in a conscious way for their second touch, which is going to be a pass, to be a great pass, and receiving across the body. Okay, so those two things are really targeted in this exercise for the particular player on the technical side. When players first get introduced to this activity, and if it's at a young age, and if they're still learning to develop their technique to a certain degree of competency, John, they usually are a disaster. You know, the first touch pops up. It can pop up a foot into the air, 3 feet into the air, or even a few inches into the air, which is already really bad because your second touch isn't going to be there quick enough, and the defender in the activity is going to win the ball, okay? And you're not going to be successful, and you're going to, instead of getting that high, that dopamine rush, that sense of accomplishment, you're going to feel down on yourself. Man, my touch is letting me down. And this happens to pretty much all the players who don't have decent technique when they first get put into this exercise. As the weeks and months go by, maybe around month 4, month 5, month 6, what happened those first couple weeks, you see less and less of. So that particular player's first touch is vastly improved, and their second touch, which is a pass, is vastly improved, and the activity now runs far more smoothly, and each individual player is having far more success, and the defender is having less success. And so I think at that point, the players do recognize a marked improvement, and now they're bought in. Now they are bought in to not only this activity, but they're bought into the coach and they're bought into themselves that they can accomplish something if they just repeatedly work on the same goddamn thing for an extended period of time. So they gain an appreciation for how long things take. And now maybe they're more willing to continue with this notion of repetition.
What would be the benefit of continuing to repeat that once you reach that certain degree of competency?
Right. Great. Perfect. So, okay, I just mentioned a graduation of levels, if you will, for that particular player after 6 months. Okay, well, is your technique, is your first and second touch as good as Xavi, Iniesta, and Busquets or Messi or something? No, it's not. Okay, so you need to do it for 10 years repeatedly for your technique to approach those sorts of levels or be comparable to those sorts of things. And it has to be this same sort of activity, this same sort of technique that you're attempting, because those guys that I just mentioned, this is how they were brought up. They were brought up with this particular activity since they were 10 years of age. And to this day, Messi, who is still in on Barcelona, is still doing this activity or very, very similar activities in training at Barcelona as a 30-something-year-old professional, greatest of all time. He's still doing it. So that, I think, answers your question, right? You have to continue, because after 6 months, if you do it for another 6 months, you're going to be that much better. After another year, you're going to be that much better. Usually what ends up happening to a lot of people, myself included, is once you reach a certain degree of competency, maybe at that 6 month or year mark in anything, you now think that you're pretty good, or you're satisfied with how good you are, and then you're looking at the next shiny object. Oh, now I want to get good at this, or now I want to get good at that. And then you become a jack of all trades and master of none, as the cliche goes. And if that's what you're shooting for, being a jack of all trades and master of none, then you're not going to get very far on the remarkable scale. And so your dreams of being, you know, something of remark are probably going to be shattered.
I think that's particularly true with coaches as well. I mean, like we're kind of bouncing back and forth between player-specific development and coaching development or coaching habits. And I think that's, you know, particularly true with coaches, is that we will do an exercise for 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, and then we see the team kind of gets it, and then we'll move on because we think they have it.
Right, right. Big mistake, big pitfall. One of the most common, if not the most common pitfall of coaching, in my opinion.
I'm going to steal some of your words again. And we've talked in the past about technical debt and, you know, how beneficial it is for somebody to start at a very young age and to, you know, start with this repetition from age 10, 11, 12 and continue on with those same exercises, you know, until the end of their careers. That would be the ideal case, like you mentioned with Messi and Xavi, Busquets, those types of guys. And the players that don't start early, they start to accrue some sort of technical debt, and there becomes, or a gap forms between them and the players that have done those types of things. And another gap that can form could be the players that got off to a great start. After about a year, they thought that they were competent enough where they could kind of let off the gas. And then they're now allowing those people that were behind, they're affording them the opportunity to catch up now. So there's kind of that gap as well. And if they had not let off the gas, they could have continued to build that gap, create a further gap. And I think you even used the word moat. So creating a moat between yourself and your competition, never allowing them to get close to you because you are always doing the work that they started after you or that they were so far behind. So never allowing them to catch up. So I guess the words moat and gap were the things that that really jumped out to me when I was kind of looking up some stuff about the topic.
No, for sure. And this sparks another thought, and that is the thought about becoming special at one particular thing. So if we continue this chat about, you know, the first touch, the second touch, this rondo, the technique and repetition, and how, you know, Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, all these Barca guys have been doing this since they were 10 and through their professional careers as well. And it's not specific to Barcelona, by the way. I hope that's obvious to everybody. I'm just using a particular example. If we follow that train of thought, one might say, well, Gary, then, you know, in general, you're never going to be as good as those guys because they've been doing it forever and we're already behind. I mean, yes and no. What's interesting in football is that every player is unique and distinct to a certain degree. And what can differentiate you, if you don't end up having that sort of first touch or technique of an Iniesta, what can differentiate you is working on a particular skill. One particular skill or action that a player takes in a game and repeating that, you know, for 10 years. And Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, they haven't been practicing that for 5, 6, 7, 10 years. For instance, there's a very particular stroke that I really like. And that is this daisy cutter driven ball, that where the ball floats or is driven 6 inches above the ground or a foot above the ground and it travels 20, 30 meters. It has an incredible utility in a match because the time it takes for the ball to get from point A to point B is much shorter than if the ball is in the air. And so that has remarkable utility at the highest levels of the game where time and space are reduced. So if you train that particular stroke for years and years and years and years and years, well, you've developed something special in your repertoire that most other players in the world don't have. Xavi didn't really have that stroke. Iniesta doesn't really have that stroke. Paul Pogba does have that stroke, okay? But look, you already surpassed Xavi and Iniesta in one particular area of the game. Does that make sense? So you can pick and choose what you like, become really good at that one particular thing, and then create your own moat and gap with others at the highest levels of the game. Same with David Beckham. David Beckham is not Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets. He's his own guy. And what was remarkable about him is his service, you know, his service and his free kicks and things of that nature. And he became one of the best in the world at just that. And there are countless stories of how he worked on that religiously, repetitively, forever. And that's what made him special.
The conversation we've had so far kind of revolved around competency and becoming competent in a particular set of skills, maybe, or just, you know, maybe in soccer in general. And what you're kind of talking about right now is, I think, you know, mastering one particular skill. So maybe what, in your opinion, what's the difference between competency and mastery, and how do those again fit into a player development puzzle? How should a 10, 11, 12 year old be thinking about that? Or how should the parent be thinking about that? Or the coach be thinking about that?
The first thing that comes to mind is these words are relative. Okay. So mastery on an absolute, in the absolute sense, would be what I just finished describing, Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, or this super special Daisy Cutter type of pass, and David Beckham, and all that sorts of stuff. So that's at the highest level, the pinnacle of the game. Or if you reduce your bubble down, and that's not what you're thinking, that those aren't your immediate goals, or maybe your end game at all, you can still be considered a master compared to somebody who is far, far, far beneath you in any one of these categories. You could reach the level, I don't know, of a Division One college player and you know, be looked at as a master in some particular area of the game because everybody else is that much further behind than you are. But then you can only be labeled as competent relative to the greats of the game. So I think it's a sliding scale. I'd say shoot for competency and then shoot for mastery above your local regional competition.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to something we've talked about too, where, you know, everybody is going to have different goals. You know, your goal could be to go from being a bench player to a starter on your club team. Your goal could be, you know, making the varsity team at your high school. Your goal could be getting a Division I scholarship. And then ultimately your, you know, a goal could be becoming a professional level player. Champions League level player would be even higher than that, right? And yeah, there's different competencies and then different masteries that you could achieve in those areas. You could, you know, be considered in to some degree, I guess, a master in the college realm. You know, if you're particularly good at one thing and you stand out in that environment, well, yeah, I guess you could be considered a master in that. But there, yeah, I guess there's different degrees of competency and mastery across the board in all those different environments.
Yeah, you're certainly a master relative to somebody who's never kicked a soccer ball in his life, and you're this great Division One college soccer player who has this great first touch, blah bitty blah bitty blah. But then there's levels,
which is again something we've talked about before. So this conversation, or all these individual conversations that we've had, become holistic, because you can't really appreciate one topic without understanding or appreciating the other topics as well. It's all player development, coaching development, all this type of stuff is all neatly intertwined, and you can't really do one thing without the other, because then it all goes haywire.
Yeah. No, it's the bell curve all over again.
When it comes to player development and repetition, how can a parent better guide or help their player, especially if it's a young player, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old? How can a parent get involved in this process and do what I guess is right to help their player develop properly?
Yeah, it's a multifaceted question because there's so many components and areas to the game. If you zoom into just one thing, and to stick with the theme of our prior discussion of the technique and the first touch and the second touch and the rondo and that sort of stuff, then one, the parents should probably try to educate themselves as to what kind of activity / i.e. aka drill are good for any particular skill, and then facilitate, you know, teach that to your kid, to your player, and then facilitate them getting their repetitions in by finding a location and making a time for them to get their reps in. I mean, those two ingredients are the most important. Educate yourself what to work on specifically, because there's a lot of things out there and there's a lot of things that aren't optimum, let's say it that way, that aren't optimal for their player to develop. And there are activities and things out there that are choice, a fundamental, correct things to be doing, and then making the time. That's on the technique front, right? But there's so many things, John. There's getting the right culture, teaching the player certain things about the game, you know, watching the right matches to learn particular things. You as a parent being educated in what to look for in particular matches and sharing that as you watch it together with your family and your players. The list is super long as to how a parent can become that mentor, that personal trainer, that advisor in a good way so that the player gets propelled forward at a quick enough rate to, you know, achieve escape velocity from their competition. There's just so many things. We just talked about technique.
And one interesting aspect of that is that if a parent is starting from ground zero with very little or no soccer knowledge or background at all, over the course of 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years, 8 years, and the repetition that a player or that a parent puts into this process of, you know, helping their player, they too will see a marked improvement in their own soccer knowledge, especially if they are able to find the right things and learn the right things and help their player do the right things. So I think that's another interesting twist on the repetition aspect, which is what we kind of wanted to focus on today.
For sure. And they're also susceptible to the same pitfall we described that coaches are susceptible to, and players and anybody, is sometimes you think that you're already good, or, you know, you've been doing something maybe for 6 months, a year, 2 or 3 years even, or even more. And you think that you already are, quote unquote, competent, or you already are very high on the understanding chart. And that's a mistake, you know, and then they stop doing the repetitions, they stop learning, and they become stuck there. And one of the traps is the bubble and the people that you're surrounded by. So take a parent, for instance, who goes from ground zero, just to make a case, right? And you have good mentors, you study, you're putting the time, the repetitions, watching games, you know, teaching your player, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. 5 years go by, 7 years go by. You feel confident and comfortable that you know what you're talking about because the people you're surrounded with are other parents primarily, and maybe some coaches and maybe some other things. But you're not talking to Pep Guardiola. You know, you're not talking to people who have significantly higher degrees of expertise than you do. And so you don't have an appreciation for how much further you have to go on the competency chart. It's just a mistake, you know, if you think you already know. I don't know how else to put it. keep going with the repetitions.
Our flagship program helps coaches and trainers discern what is good for their teams and for their players. But now we've created a program for parents. Because parents, you are personal trainers too. Yep, that's right. And in order to properly mentor your player, you need to know what's good and what's not. Just like coaches, you and your player are flooded with thousands of training videos on YouTube and Instagram. But most of them are a waste of time because they aren't relevant. They don't translate to the real game. And figuring out what does and what doesn't, and why, is just flat out difficult, especially if you don't have a background in soccer to lean on. So we've taken Brian Kleiben's more than 20 years of experience working with teams and individual players, from U9 to U19, and extracted valuable lessons that can help you navigate the minefield that is American youth soccer. But this isn't just about drills. That's only a small fraction of it. And to be honest, you can get drills anywhere. What you're getting with the 343 Masterclass are the cultural lessons and an education in philosophy that other trainers and courses don't offer. It's these elements that can help you understand the landscape, read the game on and off the field, and translate everything into real development for your player. Right now, you can get on the list for the 343 Masterclass. We are currently rolling it out little by little to small groups. To reserve your spot, go to 343masterclass.com. All right, thank you for listening. Do you have a question about the topic that we covered in this episode? If so, we'd love to hear from you, and we will be answering some of your questions at the end of next week's episode. Submit your questions on Twitter or head to 343coaching.com to leave your question in the comment section. Make sure that you are subscribed to 343 FM on your favorite podcasting app. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and many more platforms. And if you're feeling super generous, we'd love it if you dropped us a 5-star rating or a review. And don't forget that you can find our entire library of podcast episodes, over 200 written articles, and our online courses that help accelerate the development of coaches and players using methods that have been proven to work here in the United States. Once again, all of that can be found at 343coaching.com. All right. Thank you so much for listening. We will catch you next time here on the 343 Podcast. We'll be right back.